Monday the 29th of January and you're listening to the Red Army Roundup. I'm your host Paul Hinton and tonight I'm only joined by Sean Phillips. Hello there, Sean.
Hello there, Paul.
And we've got another No Aaron, No Party podcast, we're afraid. Aaron is otherwise engaged and with upcoming away trips, it's proven impossible to get a time scale where we can all get together. So we have to make do with the two of us this week. We apologise, but we've got loads to get through. The away game in Brayhead for the doubleheader against Coventry. We've had Ramax suggestions. We've had a load of burning questions through before three massive games to preview. Away to Sheffield and then away to Belfast on the doubleheader. So loads to get through. We'll get straight cracking to last Wednesday where the Devils went up to Brayhead. And Sean, obviously we weren't able to watch the game. Either us travelled and lack of webcast. Doesn't sound like we missed the most exciting of games, the Devils running out 1-0 winners.
Yeah, for sure. Matt Pope scoring the lone goal with about 9 minutes left in the game. On the power play, assisted by Joey Martin and Lane Ulmer. As you said, I listened to the Clan Radio on YouTube and it's quite an interesting thing to do, actually, because I've never really listened to hockey on the radio. So that was quite interesting to do, but I don't think I picked the right game to do it in because it was it sounded like quite a dull affair. From reports, we had an absolutely stellar effort from Ben Bounds to keep us in the game at spells, and that was good to hear that Bounds, he had, you know, won us a couple of, you know, probably gained us 2 points in that. You know, it's, if you win a one-goal game and a lot of the time your netminder is going to be your best guy on the ice, and it seems that that was the case.
Yeah, 24 shot shutout for Ben Bounds. You know, an important win to pick up. It doesn't sound like the greatest performances. Obviously, definitely didn't get the high-scoring players flying. But, you know, we've said it a lot, and we'll probably say it again as we come on to the weekend, but, you know, championship-winning teams know how to grind out results and, you know, do that little bit extra to get that one goal just to see him over the line.
For sure, yeah. You know, we're going to preview the next two. Look back at the other two games now, and another couple of one goal affairs. And yeah, the championship teams win those tight games where others are going to lose them by the odd goal. So yeah, it's good to see us win games. You know, we should be winning games like that cross conference. Admittedly, it's still a fairly tough place to go. They haven't had the best of seasons, but you know, beforehand, would I have probably taken a point from Brayhead midweek on a busy, congested schedule? Yeah, I probably would. So to get the extra one was a bonus.
Indeed, and get that in regulation wins if it were to come down to it. Moving on to the weekend, and Coventry, welcome to Cardiff for the last time this season. It's really odd that we've seen them so few times. You know, usually we play them about seven times a season, but just the three games this year. A real up and down game, Sean. The first period felt like there was a lot of dominance from the Devils, but only a solitary power play goal from Matt Pope to show for it before things started to fall apart a bit.
Yeah, we seemed to sort of get really, really good spells where we were just dominating the zone. Coventry, in fairness, were just sitting back and trying to soak up as much as they could and then try and hopefully catch us when they got a chance. And like you said, Matt Pope scored, guess one, with I think it's an absolute bullet from the point. Guess a touch on the way through to put us in the lead. And there were stages in that first period where we could have easily gone 3-4 up, purely just on the zone domination that we had. Overall, I don't think Coventry really threatened us that much. You know, the shots will show 9-7 that it was fairly even. But on balance, I think that we probably should have, you know, finished the game there and then in the first period.
Yeah, I think it was. It looked very much like the first versus sort of 9th, 10th place team that the Coventry are at the moment, competition that you probably would have expected, but wasn't the case. And the second period is, something we will come on to a bit later, but it's become a bit of a pattern to quite a flat second period. But it was also a penalty ridden period with your penalties on both sides in the second half of the period, especially trading back and forth. With the Devils going on a power play right towards the, well, coming up to the end of the period, Sean, and something you don't say very often, but a really lax defensive pass from Matthew Myers behind his own net. Bounces off the back of the net and Coventry pants on the loose puck and Robinson feeds for error and we're tied up going to the end of the second. And on the back of that performance, it was a nervy time, Sean, and you know, Devil's locker room probably not the most upbeat of places after the 20 minutes before it.
Yeah, I think after dominating the way we did in the first period and then not increasing our lead in the second after yet another good... there were spells in there where we were camped out in the zone and got a good couple of shots off. Matthew Myers, he just doesn't make mistakes like that. It's so uncharacteristic. You can see what he's trying to do. He's trying to, you know, throw the puck along the boards and reactivate the power play with Andrew Hotham. It takes a really bad bounce off the boards in front of the net, and then I think it hits the side of the net off Hotham, who's trying to reclaim it as well. And Ferreira's, you know, streaking up the ice. Brett Robinson finds him and feeds him, and is, in fairness to Luke Ferreira, it's a great finish to bounce his glove side. Like you said, that was a real... I thought that was going to be a real momentum killer because we had a good couple of, you know, spells in the second, and for them to come back and score a shorthanded goal. Shorthanded goals absolutely kill all sorts of momentum that you build up, and I think we got really frustrated with the power play in that period. It just, for whatever reason, we couldn't seem to put the puck in the net, and yeah, ultimately going into the second period break, I was not optimistic. It was one of those games where I thought we should have killed it in the first or second, and Coventry normally are good for a win in our place, you know, every year. Obviously, we only play them twice in league play this year, once in Challenge Cup, but it didn't come. They came close on the shootout over Christmas, and I sort of had that niggling feeling that Coventry, you know, they're just one of those sides which... They're nothing really all that special, but they could just nick a point from you or nick 2 points at any stage, and that was what I was fearing going into the third period.
Yeah, I can't imagine that feeling got better as the period wore on. Scoreless for the majority of the period. Devils, though, were the dominant team in terms of shots on goal, I think, in terms of, you know, territory and chances created. But it still felt like that it was going to be one of those nights where the puck just wasn't going to fall the right way. But with 69 seconds left, Patrick Assing gets that game winner, Sean.
Yeah, and it's great work from Sean Bedivoglio gaining the zone. Ulmer is so, so patient on that pass. Asselin sort of slots in behind and Ulmer finds him with an absolute beauty of a pass. Asselin's left a bit flat-footed it's on his forehand at a tight angle, and he shifts it to his backhand and just throws it straight upstairs and past the diving Kevin Nastiak, who had an absolutely brilliant game. I thought he was fantastic, I've got to be honest with you. Through the weekend, I think he was their best player. But Asselin, he's been back to his best the last 3-4 weeks, and maybe even a bit longer than that. And good to see, again, you know, clutch... always that those points which, you know, you could give Coventry a point there and take it to overtime, and then you roll the dice and 3-on-3, who knows what happens, but you make a play. Lane Ulmer's just unreal at the moment. He's absolutely on fire, finds Asselin, and we've got quite a, you know, an edgy last 69-70 seconds, but ultimately managed to hold on and take the win.
Yeah, definitely. And you mentioned Aslin's sort of patience on the shot to get it onto the backhand. I wasn't feeling his patience. I was just thinking, oh God, he's taken far too long. Then, as you said, just roost it and a cracking finish. And it was nice in a way to have that sort of tight game. They all have been this season, but you know, recently we've sort of been blowing them away, and it almost feels like that rivalry's rekindled a bit this season. But you know, obviously, in terms of the league position, it's not such a rivalry, but you know, it is nice to see that on the ice because they are, you know, historically competitive and entertaining games. I wouldn't necessarily call Saturday entertaining.
I think it does help that we don't have to play them so often as well, though.
Yeah, I think that is true. It's a bit more of a, yeah, like I said, some seasons, I think there was one season we ended up playing about 12 times with pre-season and cups. So, yeah.
Yeah, we played them in a cup. Yeah, we played, I think it was four. eight league games because it was four because they were in conference. So eight, two preseason was 10. Then we played a Challenge Cup semi final against them or a quarter final. Oh, so
We had them in their group, which was another two, and then a two legged semi final. So it was 14 games if you counted preseason. Yeah.
Oh, ouch! And now we're down to what is it?
Six. Yeah, it's a much better looking schedule when it's spread out a little bit more.
And you always play two at Christmas as well, so it's only four to fit around the rest of the year.
Yes, yeah. And the last one of those six games, the next night, Devils heading to Coventry, buoyed by the win, but Coventry would have taken some great heart from the performances that they put in. And we spoke about it on the way up, Sean, that sort of felt like it might be a different story. Well, I did especially felt it'd be a different story on Sunday, that Devils had come out harder, come out a bit faster, potentially having underestimated what was needed to see off the Blaze. I felt like I'd been proved right, to be honest, at the end of the first. Morissette on a power play, giving us a lead before it was doubled before the end. And it was a very dominant first period, Sean, and what you'd expect to see the Devils doing against a team in Coventry's league position.
Yeah, definitely. I think Coventry would have definitely been buoyed by the effort that they put in, come that close to getting a point. Also by the suspension of Gleeson Fournier from the previous night. Got suspended for two games after a minor boarding penalty on Luke Ferreira caused an injury. We found out on the bus up that we were going to be without Gleeson for that game. So Coventry would have been buoyed by that. Cardiff, obviously missing one of their key players, an absolute dominant force on the power play.
Just on that point, Sean, so obviously the decision was announced on the way up. The video review has come out just today as we've recorded. What did you feel it was the right decision from Dops to give him that two-game suspension?
Yeah, absolutely. I thought on the night it didn't look like a great hit. A lot of the time, I feel like Borden isn't given 5-plus game enough in this league, especially when injuries like that are caused. And the video released by Dops is fantastic. Like, even as a fan of a team who's on the receiving end of a Dops, a Dops decision, which we haven't been that often this year, thankfully, touch wood. You struggle to disagree with anything that they're saying in that video. He could have gone at it in a different angle. It wasn't really necessary. It wasn't a goal scoring opportunity.
The part where they pause the video and show the moment where you can see Fournier look away from the puck and they talk about charging the hit, charging up the hit. And like you said, it's done in such a way in time really well with the video that it would be extremely rose-tinted to try and disagree with what was being said, I think.
Yeah, and it's massively educational as well. Like, as much as we all like to think we are sometimes, we're not referees. And I think that the more you see things like that, and it does genuinely help hockey fans as an education. And I like that the league is not only doing their bit to protect players now, but also to educate fans a bit as well. I think that's a really, really good and integral part of what Dobbs is doing. I totally agree with the decision. I think two games is right. I think there are worse things, hits to the head, hits from behind, which get more, get slightly more than that. So I think two games on balance compared to what everyone else gets. I know you're not meant to, it's meant to be based on the isolated incident, but in comparison, I think that two games is probably fair.
I think I'd agree with that. I think sort of one thing to note is that we probably got away with it a little bit definitely did on Saturday. My understanding of the rules is that if there's an injury on a play and a penalty's called, the least you can call is a major, which would have been a 5 minutes. Yes. So,
correct.
And it was a very clear injury, sort of standing above block nine, Luke Ferreira went off holding his arm, looking quite white, and he raced off. So obviously wish all the best to Luke Ferreira in his recovery from what hopefully isn't too bad of an injury to his arm. But as soon as it happened, I thought, I hadn't seen the hit clearly, felt like it was a bad one, but due to that, just expected Fournier to be sitting a five game, but just the 2 minutes, which possibly contributed to us getting that win. So while he was suspended Sunday and will be for Wednesday's game in Sheffield, maybe dodge a little bit of a bullet on the night as well. Which does take us then on to Sunday, as we mentioned. So getting a little bit out of order. Devils taking the decision to run with the same imports as on Saturday, minus Fournier. We're obviously not sure the status of Drew Parris at the moment, as we discussed last week. But Devils, if he is fit, decided not to fit him into the D, and we ran with 5D instead. Which didn't seem to be an issue at all, Sean. As I said in that first period, with the Devils getting those two goals through Morissette and Patrick Aslin, and you're being quite dominant, did you feel?
Yeah, I did. I thought, it probably could have been more. Watching the highlights back, we had a number of chances where Nastia bailed the Blaze out again. I thought he was their man of the match. We seem to play a lot of what we used to do with Brian Stewart and try and drag him around the net a little bit. And I think it would have worked out well for us, but we kept shooting quite low and hard on those attempts. And Nastia was awesome. Point blank, I thought he was brilliant. But the two goals we scored were very good. I think the persistence from Morissette on the first one, he gets a good shot off, Nastia expels it a little bit, and Morissette doesn't give up on the play, goes straight to the front of the net, puts the puck in, just about jams it home. And the second one is pure brilliance from Ben Davolio. The forecheck on it is immense. Chases the puck down, finds Aslin, who's driving to the net. And the finish on it is simply sublime from Patrick Aslin on his backhand. Nastiak is completely following the trajectory of the pass. Aslin says, nope, completely going the other way, and absolutely fakes him out of his pads. And we go into the first period break with what I felt was a well-deserved lead, and probably should have been more. And again, we should have put the game to bed in that first period.
Should have put the game to bed, but as you said, the performance was...
Oh, yeah.
...was more than enough that... Just carry that on. The game was done at 2-0. It should have been done. Instead, it really wasn't. Devils came out flat, which was especially frustrating as we came out with a 2-minute power play. Danny Stewart taking a 2-minute minor for abuse of officials as he was walking across the ice to the Coventry locker room. Just still massively irritating, even when he's not wearing skates in it. Hockey shirt, but, you know, Devils had a power play, and it was a terrible, terrible power play attempt. I think there was at least one, if not two, icings from us during it. And not being able to do anything on that power play really seemed to kill our momentum, and it was only just over a minute after Adam Cochrane, who sat the penalty, returned to the ice, that Valoran, the league's top goal scorer, gave Coventry a goal, Sean, and Devils just didn't come back from it. And, you know, I felt we were probably lucky to go into the end of the second at 2-2 after Dingle had equalised.
Yeah, as you said, Paul, I'm completely in agreement with you. We just didn't look at the races. We'd lost all our go, all our jump. We didn't seem to have anything left. We were very, very flat, as you said. And it's two good finishes. Valorant's finishes, is in fairness, is very, very good. Tyson Strachan does everything he can to get in the way of the pass that he's trying to make and doesn't quite get the bounce that he needs on it. And Valoran, you know, throws it in the net from midair. It's a great finish. The Dingle one is how Dingle is allowed to skate through the zone past two defensemen is absolutely woeful. Bryce Reddick had an absolute mare on that. I thought he was fantastic on Saturday, Bryce Reddick, just putting that out there. But that play on Sunday was pretty poor. You know, two defensemen that close to a guy like Dingle on a small ice pad, you know, he should never be getting through that gap. But ultimately he does, and they find himself going into the second period break with all to play for, like you said. And it was at that stage, I thought we played so well in the first and then let Coventry back in, and maybe it was going to be too little too late. I know there was 20 minutes to get it done, but I felt momentum was all with them. And yeah, again, going into the third period, was not confident.
Yeah, almost a mirror image of the previous night, the way the two periods have gone, and probably the emotions amongst the Devils fans watching the game. Third period saw a few more penalties get called. Some very strange calls, a couple of slashing calls against the Devils that...
Soft. soft course.
With soft, to put it mildly. And Valorant took 2 minutes for tripping, which again, a stick goes through the legs. It's a tripping call, but it was a bit of a melee of a couple of players. And I sort of thought I'd have been quite annoyed if it had been called against us, but was obviously happy that it wasn't. Devils had the power play and had started to get the power play working, and were set as Valorant came back on the ice, but managed to keep the puck going. Lane Olmer had the puck behind the goal line. And I just stood there thinking, he's kept this puck too long. The defenseman put his stick down on the ice and Leon looked to be passing it straight into the stick. And I just rolled my eyes thinking, that's the most stupid thing I've ever seen. And somehow the puck went through the D-man, landed on Morissette's stick, and there was the goal winner. So not a power play goal, but totally off the back of the power play setup. And you know, another really nicely worked goal from.
Yeah, and it's great zone entry again from the power play unit, and we keep it around a bit. And as you said, the patience from Lane Olmer is again fantastic. Two nights in a row to show, you know, that patience and wait for the play to open up, and finds Morissette, who's just so clutch for us at the moment. Sent through, you know, a power play goal in the first period, almost another power play goal in that third, and ultimately the game winner. He's just showing that he's captain clutch at the moment. Everything he's touching is turning to gold. He's been fantastic. He's showing why he's on that power play unit. You know, you'd never think, you look at Jake Morissette's resume through his career and maybe not the highest point scorer, and you sort of think, why is he playing on one of the power play units of the league's top team? And he's showing us why at the moment, because he's just producing the goods left, right and centre, and can't say enough good things about Jake Morissette at the moment.
Not at all. And there's not many players at the moment that you'd want to puck fall into in and around the net. It's,
he's playing with a lot of confidence at the moment as well.
Yeah, his confidence is up and definitely got his eye in at the moment when the puck comes to him. So I was halfway through the third period, so there was a bit of holding on for the Devils to do. Another penalty to kill, which was done. And some really solid saves from Ben Bams throughout the game to keep us in it. I think he had a really good weekend, a good week if you count the shutout, up in Braehead as well. So job done. not easy at all, and definitely made life difficult for ourselves. Two nights in a row in that with a poor second period, but 6 points from six over the course of the week, and time for a player of the week. Sean, who are you voting for?
I'm going to go with number 23, Patrick Asselin. The clutch to score that winning goal, the patience, the calmness. You know, he doesn't panic and just throw something at the net. He takes the time to get a good shot off on the goalie to get the winning goal. I thought the finish on his goal for Sunday was simply sublime, as I just said. I think he's getting back to the Patrick Asselin we knew from last season, and he's playing his best hockey, actually. I think, you know, we loved him last year, and this spell that he's on at the moment, he's on a bit of a tear. He's making things happen, and yeah, I think he fully deserves Player of the Week. Special mentions go to Tyson Strachan, who I thought was fantastic, and Lane Olmer, just for the pure patience on the setting up of a couple of goals over the weekend. But ultimately, Patrick Asselin for me.
If we were magnanimous enough to do an away Player of the Week, I think Kevin Astick would
Kevin
be walking
Astick.
It.
Yeah,
more, he was mentioned. He had two excellent games and definitely didn't deserve to be on a team that took 0 points.
Without a doubt.
But he did, unfortunately for him. But we have a winner on Player of the Week. Got to agree with you on Patrick Asselin. Someone who massively frustrated me for the first few months of this season. For whatever reason, definitely wasn't firing on all cylinders. But as you said, he's started to be coming back to his best. And this weekend, I think was him back at that level that we saw last year on a regular basis. I think there were some outstanding performances across the team. You mentioned Ben Bounds was solid both games. Also thought that Sean Bentivoglio had a really strong weekend, and Matt Pope as well playing. He seems to be coming into a bit of form now. We're getting into the latter stage of the season. It's sort of really good. There's quite a few players you can talk about now who all seem to be finding their feet and are playing their best hockey of the season as we're getting into that clutch time. But Patrick Astin's the one who stood out this week and Congratulations to Patrick Aslin, who is the player of the week. Sean, I think on social media we had a couple of Rahmite suggestions in.
We did. Thank you as ever for your Rahmite suggestions. Tony Dickin at Tony Baloney 36 said, love how Matt Pope's character on and off the ice is coming across more and more as the season goes on. Just off the back of what Paul said there regarding Matt Pope coming around at this massive clutch time of the year. And we also had one from Jason Manley, whose Rahmite was good. We managed to scrape two wins. Better teams chasing us lost. The best. He managed to get this in before we recorded our podcast this week. And his bad was that he played Zorb football and pretty sure the ball wasn't there as he never saw the thing once. So I missed the Zorb football, but evidently not a good return for Jason in that department this week.
Do have to thank Jason for giving me a heads up that he was playing. I don't usually get a chance to take it in that much. But made a special effort and did enjoy it. My favourite moment being when Jason had been wiped out, managed to get himself back up to his knees, and just as he was looking quite proud of himself, getting back on his feet, got wiped out again before he managed it. It was, I might have laughed a little bit more than I should have, so sorry, Jason. yeah, so get your Rahmite suggestions in. We've obviously got a game Wednesday, so you know, send them in then, send them in after the Belfast weekend. I think the bad could be the hangovers for a very large contingent of Devils fans if they're being sent in on Sunday or Friday or Saturday, potentially. We've also had quite a few burning questions, I think, Sean. So if you want to, who's up first?
First up, okay, we'll go with Michael Brain, who is at MichaelBrain55, and said, what do you think our mental block is with the second period the last couple of weeks? Any thoughts?
I think it's difficult. I think this week, especially, I almost felt there was an air of we were trying to conserve energy on Saturday at least. When we went a goal up early, Tom Zruckis was getting ice time quite quickly. And you know, that's not something we've seen this season. It's usually been later in games when we're two or three goals up, and got the impression that potentially we sort of felt like the job was done at 1-0, that we could coast our way through. And after the break at the end of the first, maybe we just struggled to get ourselves even to that level. We got in that mindset. There's an argument for that. The same thing on Sunday, to be fair. We'd gone 2-0 up playing a more dominant brand of hockey. And again, whether that sort of, we've got a really tough schedule coming up. Let's do as much as, or as little as we can to keep our lead. And I don't disagree with that approach, but we're just not finding that balance right at all at the moment, if that is the case. Is that your take on it, Sean? Or do you see something else with it?
I think that is it. Purely because our schedule is crazy. So I think that does have something to do with it. I will counter your point, though. In the way that you say we're not maybe striking that balance quite rightly, but, you know, are we, you know, those games that we won against Coventry, were we completely busting a gut to score in the third period in both those games? I feel like we were still at 100%. And so, you know, you say it's probably maybe the balance isn't quite there, but we've got 4 points from it this week. You know, I think we could have done more if we needed to be quite honest. I know we left it quite late on in the third period.
I think that's my point. Saturday especially, that, you know, 69 seconds left. That's tight, you know, that's two shifts at best. If whatever we were trying there doesn't come off, and yeah, it came off, and like we said, that's what you expect. But I just think I'd like to see us be a couple of goals up like we were on Sunday and coasting, but you know, just keeping that distance. And I think by letting teams back in, you do naturally have to exert a bit more energy then to get back into a game. But the opposition have got their backs up, whereas if you can keep them at arm's length, you can just slowly grind the game out, whereas not chasing it, we've still got that point, you've still got overtime, you've still got penalties, but I think my heart would like it if we could also, if we could make it a little bit more comfortable, but just isn't too the devil's way.
At least it's exciting. Frustrating sometimes, but still exciting, and, you know, your ticket is, you know, you're getting your money's worth because you're getting a full 60 minutes of competitive action. I will say that.
Yes, yeah, we are. We're definitely getting that at the moment. But
I know getting, what you mean. I know exactly. Moves on, yeah.
I'm going to lose interest in excitement. The next three games we've got, I'd rather not have an exciting game anywhere near it. I'm quite happy to be bored to death
being, you know, blowing teams out in the first period. Yeah, totally with you. Okay, so next up we had Greg Hewish, who is at Hewish Greg. Why do you guys think we give up so many shorthanded goals? 8 so far this season, the third worst in the league. The rest of our game is looking so solid. This is something we discussed a couple of weeks ago, Paul. Is it because our power play is also the best in the league and that we sometimes try and make things happen too much on the power play that it leaves us, you know, a bit short at the back? Is that something which we did come to the conclusion of? And, you know, after conceding yet another one, is that something which you think is correct?
I think overall, yeah. I think at the time a couple of weeks ago, I'd worked out that if you deducted every shorthanded goal from the total power play goals we'd scored, our power play percentage is still the best in the league. So, you know, it's by far the best power play, or it was at the time. So shorthanded goals are almost the price we're paying potentially for that. I think Saturday's was a bit of an outlier. It wasn't that we were pushing it. It was just a very bad pass. That could have happened at any stage. Didn't feel like we were rushing anything, but I do think the other thing is that at times when we're on the blue line, we are making the bad decision. It's either there's a lot of passes when we're in deep are just fired back at the blue line, and if they come a little bit short, they land on a opposition stick, or if they go a little bit long, you've got the risk of a breakaway. It just becomes a race for the puck. So I think there is an element of the way we're set up that we're trying to quickly get the pucks to the blue line that's costing it, but it is working overall. It is something, you know, as you said, when we talk about the first Coventry game, it can be a real momentum swinger. And luckily, I think Greg, there was a bit of a discussion after Greg's question, and he made the point that it hasn't really cost us apart from that 5 home game so far, in that while we're letting them in, we're scoring enough either on the power play or elsewhere. But the last words he says is could become an issue. And I think where we're moving into games against Belfast, against Sheffield in the semi-final, that type of momentum is probably going to be much bigger and maybe pounce on a little bit more. So, yeah, if it tightens up our power play a little bit, I think in those games it wouldn't upset me to see that if we stop giving up quite so many short-handed attempts.
Okay.
Did you work? You happy with the way it's going, Sean?
We're top of the league. Our power play was the best in the league when we had the discussion last week. We've scored a couple of power play goals since then and conceded one shorthanded goal. So, if anything, our percentage is probably still better than it was when you worked it out. So, you know, if not at the same rate. So, yeah, ultimately, I'm happy with how things are going in that regard. I do genuinely think that our power play is one of our best weapons. Like, and in terms of the D that we run on that power play, you know, we run Mark Richardson and Andrew Hotham regularly. The other two is Fournier and Pope. Correct me if I'm wrong. On that, those are the two defensemen or the two men. You've got Matt Pope as the point man, and Fournier is the defenseman in that one. So, ultimately, yeah, I think things are going really well, and I wouldn't want to see it. You know, if we give up another 2 shorthanded goals through the rest of the year and score at the rate we've been scoring power play goals, then yeah, I'll be happy.
Yeah, I think that's more than fair enough. I think another question.
Yeah, we had another question from Kevin Purse, who is at Kevin Purse. As we have a couple of big games coming up, would you like to see Lordo on the bench or on the ice? Following the discussion that we had last week, Paul, you know, we talked about the schedule last week, and I asked that question of whether Andrew Lord has played his last game possibly as a Cardiff Devil, and, you know, looking at the suspension to Gleeson Fournier, Paris, I think, warmed up, so he looks to be coming back to his full fitness. You know, what are your thoughts on it regarding seeing Andrew Lord play in the next couple of weeks?
Yeah, I think, you know, so very much same as last week, that he's not played now, I can't even think when the last time Lord was on the ice. It was definitely before Christmas, Sean. Probably back towards the start of our winning streak, I would imagine. And performances have gone up since then. Results have definitely gone up. Taking points in nearly all of our games since mid-November. And the league's a high quality. I don't think you can stand on a bench for that long and come back in and make a massive impact. And as we discussed last week, Andrew Lord hasn't been making that much of an impact this season anyway. So, I think it'd be a big ask. And I said, unless there is some crazy injury crisis, I wouldn't put him in there. But on the very same, level, I don't think Andrew Lord is looking to play again. I think whether he's played his last game, whether we see him again in a single game situation, I don't know. But I think Andrew Lord is starting to see himself as the coach of the Cardiff Devils, not the player coach of the Cardiff Devils. And I think overall that is a good thing. It would be very sad if he has played his last game for us, because he was a great player over a number of seasons and has brought a lot of success to the club. But he still stood there on the bench. But I think that's where he sees himself now. And I think it's where he's best suited to us. You don't see us getting out-coached a lot. And that was something that we've discussed on previous episodes where he's been on the ice, especially against Nottingham last season, where you, Sean, especially felt like he struggled against Corey Nielsen last season. But this year, we're up in the series against Nottingham.
Yeah, and I think my way of looking at it is, you look at that Nottingham game last week where we went 4-0 down in the first period, and ultimately, we nearly clawed something from that game. I don't think if Andrew Lowe was on the ice, we would have done that. In my own, genuinely, as an honest opinion, I feel like that's, I just feel like, same as you, Paul, I feel like he's best suited where he is. Performances are better. I think Andrew Lord is that sort of high energy player where now maybe is starting to take his toll on his body to play that role, and he hasn't had that impact this year that he did last year. I just think that if he's not going to contribute, if he can't contribute on the ice when he's playing, then you may as well sit standing behind the bench, because that's where, I think that's where his future is ultimately. His best playing days are behind him. I don't think they're ahead of him. But his best coaching days are ahead of him. And so that's that, like you said, it's sad if it is, if he has played his last game. But, if really, really needed, I know that if we need a body that badly, then Andrew Lord can still play a little bit, I'm sure. But ultimately, with the magnitude and importance of the games that we got upcoming, we're playing two in Belfast, one in Sheffield in a cup game. I don't even think Andrew Lord has warmed up. Correct me if I'm wrong. The last couple of weeks.
Warm-ups, yeah.
Yeah, he's not even warmed up the last couple of weeks. So that'll tell you exactly where his mindset is that even if someone took, two pucks to the face in warm-up, God forbid, touch wood, it doesn't happen. But, he's not looking to play. So that for me says, in my mind, that's what he sees for himself as well, that I don't want Andrew Lord playing in one of those games this week, regardless of how strenuous the schedule is. I would rather play without a guy if we were going to be injured. But obviously, we're going to have a full complement of imports regardless. So,
yeah, and just on the note, sort of talking about Andrew Lord's impact, I still think even if he was playing at a higher level, I still think that what he offers us on the bench is more than enough. That if you've got other people, then they should definitely be playing.
Okay, following on from that, we had a question from Tony Dickin at TonyBaloney36. What happens when a goal is awarded following a video review? Is the clock reset back to the time of the goal? If a team has scored, is it wiped off? If the Clans review had been successful on Wednesday, would their 2+10 penalty have stood? Paul, you and I have a bit of knowledge on this. After, I think it was possibly a Challenge Cup game in Sheffield a couple of years back.
The first year
under the new ownership and Andrew Lord, I believe it was when Mike Forney was playing there, actually, who was the scorer of the goal. The puck bounced off the back bar, the white bar, puck obviously had gone in the net. But the decision on the ice was that the puck hadn't gone in. The play then went on and on and on and on and on. And I think it was about 2.5 minutes later that there was... It may have been three, 4 minutes that the play went on, and Tom Darnell then consulted his linesman, who was adamant that the puck had crossed the line. And obviously they didn't have the video review in those days, but the referee, you know, had good faith in his linesman's decision. And he was right that the puck did cross the line, and the clock was then rewound to the time of the goal. So we had, you know, anything that had happened after that point, whether if we had scored a goal, it's also happened in the NHL. Paul, I think you've seen that happen once or twice.
Yeah. So there was an incident very similar, like the puck had crossed the line but hadn't been picked up on the ice. Play went on, nowhere near as long, probably a minute, a little bit more than that. But the team at the other end went and scored, but on the video review, the first goal gets given, so that second goal gets washed out. The last part of Tony's question around the penalty is interesting. I would be confident in saying that there wouldn't be a power play for any penalty that was given. Whether or not that player would have to sit for the time, because they've obviously committed the offence. Craig Sescon took a two... It was in the Brayhead game. Clamett hit the post as the play went on. Craig Sescon took a 2+10 for checking to the head. They reviewed it. The puck had hit the post. No goal. But it's interesting. Does Craig Sescon get a freebie then, that he's checked someone to the head? He doesn't have to sit any minutes. And as Tony asked, would it be reviewed? Because there is no time on the clock that exists for when that happened. Unless that penalty, I guess, Sean, would be put at the time of the goal. Because obviously you can have an incident after a goal, and it, you know, just because the whistle's gone and the play's dead, you can still take a penalty after a goal. So potentially a penalty would stand.
Yeah, it's difficult. I think that the misconduct would definitely stand. Say for example it's that bad. Say Craig Sescon gets 5+ game. You know, does he then, if the goal gets awarded and he's sat in the stands in his suit, does he then have to go and put his gear back on?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I genuinely don't know. I have reached out to a couple of friends who are referees to get the official word on it and see where they would, or sorry, what the actual ruling of it is. So I asked that, you know, this evening. I haven't got a response, but if I do get a response, we will, you know, report back that next week. Ultimately, I don't think the 2 minutes would stand. I think the misconduct would, and you'd be forced to serve the 10 from the time that the goal was scored.
And so, then the review would carry out under the normal process if it was a penalty worthy of a review.
Yeah, that's my gut feeling on it. In any case, because I think if you can wash out a goal based on the fact that it wouldn't have happened if the other goal had been awarded, then I feel like the same can be said of a minor penalty.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That's my that would be my logical view of it.
If you stood me on the ice and told me to referee a game when I had to make the decision, that's what I would do. I'd have no idea if it was right,
that's after you managed to stand up for the 85th attempt.
Yes, yeah. Well, I'm just going to sit on the centre dot. That's my plan. Just watching all go on around me on a swivel chair. Yeah, so thank you. Some really interesting questions there. And as Sean said, hopefully we'll get an answer to the last part of Tony's question and be able to report back next week. We'll let you know if we do. Do keep the questions coming in. You know, we love discussing anything and everything that you guys want to hear us talking about. It's always good to have plenty of topics of discussion. Just before we preview the upcoming weekend, Sean, one bit of news from the league that Jan Schmeichel has announced he's refereed his last game in Britain. Always a disappointment to lose officials, but we're not, you know, overly burdened with, you know, a massive number. But for me, he was always a good referee, and, you know, you feel it's a loss to the league losing Jan?
Yeah, I really do. I think one of his first games at IAW was his first in the league, actually, one of our games at Ice Arena Wales. And I've always really enjoyed games that Jan has refereed. I found that they've often been very free-flowing, which normally wouldn't benefit a side like us, given that we're very skillful and there's, you know, he's very, seemed to be, let a lot go rather than being very zero tolerance on it, like Tom Donnell. And but I've always found that he was very consistent and didn't take anything, any back chat from players. It, more than happy to hand out 10-minute misconduct penalties, which I do really like in a referee. I think that is something which goes way under the radar in professional sport, is the way that players treat officials sometimes. And ultimately, I think that he managed to stamp authority on a game almost every game I saw him take control of. And obviously quite sad to lose him. We don't have a great plethora of referees waiting to step up to the plate and referee at this level, which, you know, given the speed of the game now and the amount of referees we do require with the four-man system, is it's always a shame to lose someone. But all the best to Jan in whatever he turns his hand to, and hopefully it isn't his last game ever.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, all those sentiments. Always some of the better refereed games. Always felt a lot more confident. You get enjoyment when saw that Schmeichel was assigned as the official. So yeah, the big loss to the league, and all the best to Jan in whatever comes next. Looking ahead, Sean, before the Belfast doubleheader, there's a small matter of the semi-final first leg away to Sheffield in Ice Sheffield on Wednesday. A large contingent of Devils fans are going to be travelling up with the announcement that Devils have paid for bus travel for, I think, 62 fans on the bus going up for free. So, you know, a massive gesture from the club, and shows the importance of fans at home and on the road. A tough game, Sean, and Sheffield had a very poor result on Saturday, losing in Milton Keynes 5-2. But had a little bit of a bounce back on Sunday, where they ran out 8-0 victors at home to Belfast. A result that I'm sure they needed after a run of bad ones, but they're going to be a team high on confidence when we get there on Wednesday.
Yeah, definitely. Although, you know, they're gonna really struggle, Sheffield. You know, they play more away games than anybody else in this league. That 2-minute walk to Ice Sheffield really does take it out of you, bust legs and all that sort of thing. They're gonna be reveling in the victory against Belfast. They absolutely pummeled them into the ground. They're gonna be high on confidence. Liam Kirk is playing really well at the moment. Yamtin's back from suspension. They made a re-sign-in for the fourth time this season with the same guy, and there's all that hype about that. So, yeah, ultimately, it's going to be a tough test. It's going to be a trophy which we beat Sheffield in the final last year. They haven't won it for a long time. We've beaten them in two finals, once in their barn, once in our barn. They're not going to want to see us progress to the final in any sort of way. It's a trophy that they're going to want to win, and we've got to go there and keep it tight, to be honest with you. Ice Sheffield, we've been there ourselves once in the last couple of years. It wasn't a great performance. But Sheffield this year, I feel like we're a much better side than them. But then you can never write Sheffield off in any competition. They just have that winning mentality. And as I said, it's a competition they really, really want to win after not doing it for such a long time. And it's going to be a real, real tough ask. I'd happily come away with the tie right now. I'd absolutely bite your hand off for a tie right now.
When you said I'd happily come away, I thought you were even going to suggest a one goal deficit, which.
Oh yeah, we come away with a one goal deficit, and we just need to at least win the game to force overtime. And I'd be happy with a one goal deficit. I would absolutely bite your hand off for a draw right now.
I think any first leg that's away from home, pretty much at any stage, I would happily take a draw. So a couple of goal lead would be a lot nicer. You know, let's not get ahead of ourselves and set it too low. But you know, you said Sheffield, if you look at their league position, some of the performances this year, yeah, they're definitely a team of old, but you know, I think Belfast found out on Sunday that if you underestimate them, that can come back and bite you a little bit, and it bit them a lot. And an 8-0 in a first leg definitely wouldn't be a good thing. So
no.
It's, no tough. Everyone touch wood that doesn't happen. So then we move on to Belfast, Friday and Saturday. Devils in the traditional doubleheader in Belfast. It's been a long-standing fixture of the calendars. Belfast coming off a really poor weekend, Sean. Not just that 8-0 defeat in Sheffield, also ran out 4-2 losers in Nottingham the night before. So I think Belfast also play Nottingham in the Challenge Cup on Wednesday. They're in Nottingham, yep. So their travel is not good. Both those games this weekend were away for them as well. So got a lot of back and forth over the water. For me, Sean, I am really relieved that we're not the next game after their 8-0 loss. They've got that game against Nottingham, which hopefully will be their bounce back game, because I think there's going to be a reaction at some stage. And I really want to see it on Wednesday, not on Friday.
Yeah, for sure. And it's the biggest weekend of the season for us. I think they probably are closest title rivals. And as you said, they're going to want to bounce back after an absolutely diabolical performance in Sheffield. You've got to think that Keith read the Riot Act, and the guys are going to want to react, and they're going to have to bring their best if they're going to want to win. If they're going to want to win the league and challenge for it, then they're going to have to start this weekend against us. And like you said, I would not like that to be on the bounce back of an absolute drubbing at the hands of the Steelers.
Belfast. You mentioned sort of Belfast, if they want to get back into the league, is obviously worth mentioning at the minute. Devils are 7 points clear of Belfast with a game in hand. You think a repeat of last year, yeah, that's an 11-point gap with a game in hand for the Devils. And that's a lot of distance for anyone to come back from at this stage of the season. But, you know, the reverse result, and Belfast are right back where they were before the start of this weekend just gone. And so it comes back down to just a handful of points between us. So,
yeah,
you know, Belfast have got everything to play for this weekend, and probably have almost everything to lose, I think.
Absolutely, yeah. And, you know, even if, you know, if they do, you know, have a good weekend, then they still have to play us three more times. Once they're in Belfast, twice at Ice Arena Wales. So, ultimately, this title is in the hands of the two people who are in it. You know, no one's got to rely on results going their way. If Belfast win all their games against us and keep winning a lot of their other games, then they're going to be in with a good shout of lifting the Monteith Bowl at the end of the year. If we win those games, you know, if we win these two games this weekend, we have got a lot of breathing space. Like, there's no denying it. It's a nice gap to have. It maybe eases the pressure, but it does not mean by any stretch it's job done. Just looking at the game, you know, we still haven't heard from Dobbs regarding the major penalties addressed to Sebastian Sylvester, who got a 2+10 for check to the head. 2-10 for check to the head in Sheffield. Brendan Connolly, who had a 5+ game for check to the head. We still awaiting the results of what, if any, of what supplementary discipline, if any, is given to them by the Department of Player Safety. So I think from reading what Belfast fans put and watching replays, they're definitely going to get at least one game, which puts them out of their game against Nottingham on Wednesday. Yeah, and possibly more. So, you know, they could be missing this weekend. And, you know, we're lucky in the fact that we do get Gleeson Fournier fully rested and back for that game. They may be without bodies, and if so, it's going to be a big ask for them. I know they're at home, but it's just going to be it's such an exciting weekend for everyone at any stage. You know, it's a great city to go to and explore and drink and all that, but the hockey's always been the focal point for myself in particular. And the last 2 years this year and the year just gone, where the two sides were involved in a pretty tight title race, for me, it doesn't get any better, to be quite honest with you. I think it's the most exciting time of the year, and we're lucky that we get this doubleheader now rather than back in, you know, November, and we get it when it matters the most. So yeah, I'm really, really looking forward to it.
Yeah, yes, I said always a massive highlight, and the numbers of Devils fans going over is absolutely crazy. I think
I think it's up again on last year.
I think estimates around 350 last year. I think on sort of guaranteed sorted tickets is expecting there to be, you know, closer to 450 this year already, and
yeah, you
know, sort of seeing on Twitter there's still people booking flights and last minute accommodations. So you know, it shows you just how important and you know, what this magnitude of the weekend is.
Yeah,
the Devils fans are going to be there. So yeah, it's going to be a fantastic one. Maybe a slightly subdued podcast next week as Sean, Aaron and myself may be nursing some minor drink related heavy
deficiencies. Yeah,
and with potentially the answer for Lewis on his burning question last week of how much is too much booze in Belfast, we'll find out. That is everything for this week, though. We apologise again for the lack of Aaron and therefore the lack of party. But we will be back next weekend to look at the Sheffield game and these two big games in Belfast. Get your Armite suggestions into us and please do send your burning questions in. It's been great. The last two or three weeks we've had loads in, and you know, it's always something that we enjoy receiving and we enjoy talking about. So thank you for listening. And for now, that is your Red Army Rounder. Every single one of us, the devil inside, devil inside, devil inside. Every